720 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks so much for being with us today. I'm always grateful to you for sharing part of your Saturday afternoon with me. Little bit of a short show today. We had a little bit longer show last week. We're making up for it this week. We're going to get you that White Sox pregame about 12:40. So we're going to cut things off a little bit shorter than usual, but still lots to do and lots of things to talk about. We're joined right now by Lisa Shanker, who is a business reporter covering healthcare at Chicago Tribune, who wrote about independent pharmacies in Illinois and why it's harder and harder for them to keep their doors open right now. Hi, Lisa. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you. Appreciate you taking the time to talk this story through with us. So where do we start with this? I think we all see a good mix of, you know, independent, longstanding pharmacies in our neighborhoods and things like that. But then we also usually see like a Walgreens or CVS down the block. Is it about competition or is it about something else?
Well, one of the things, I mean, independent pharmacies are, they have a number of issues they're working through, but one of the things they've been particularly hit hard by in recent years have been low reimbursements from the state's Medicaid managed care program. And that's basically just a program in which private insurers administer Medicaid on behalf of the state.
And so larger companies are ostensibly better able to absorb some of that, whereas smaller pharmacies are being harder hit, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that's one possibility. That's one thing I'm hearing is that people wonder, well, maybe the Walgreens and CVSs of the world can absorb it a little bit better because they're so large, or perhaps they're getting different rates. It kind of depends on who you talk to.
And is this unique to Illinois, or are other states experiencing this sort of problem too?
This is an issue, I think, in a lot of states where independent pharmacies have been struggling under these programs. The idea of Medicaid managed care, where private insurers are managing Medicaid on behalf of the state, it's become really popular across the country. A lot of states are doing that. But in those states, a lot of the time, independent pharmacies are saying that they're not receiving the kind of money from those insurers for medications as they used to receive from their states.
And do you have a sense of the scale of this in Illinois, of how many pharmacies have closed so far, maybe how many are, you know, could possibly be closing in the near future? Any sort of data point around that?
Sure. It's the program really, Medicaid Managed Care in Illinois has been around for a while, but it really kind of transformed and expanded last year. And that's when a lot of the independent pharmacies that maybe hadn't been participating too much in it before started really feeling this. And so since last year when the program expanded, at least a dozen independent pharmacies across the state have closed. So I've heard numbers that actually may be as high as like 50 or 60.
And as you note in your story at ChicagoTribune.com, which I'm going to tweet out after the program because I want everyone to be able to read this for themselves, you note that some independent pharmacists are looking to Springfield for kind of a longer-term solution and some kind of fix here. What are those solutions that they're looking for in from state legislation?
Well, this year, I think one of the things they're targeting is something called spread pricing. There are these organizations called pharmacy benefit managers, and what they do is they act as middlemen between drug companies and insurers and the state. And the pharmacies are saying that under this Medicaid managed care program, this program was supposed to save the state money, but instead they say what's happening is the state is paying just as much for drugs as it always has, but that money instead is going into the hands of the pharmacy benefit managers, these middlemen, and that's money that the independent pharmacists say used to go to them. And so they're targeting some of those practices.
Yeah, yeah. So what is kind of the next beat of this on the horizon that we can be looking towards and see kind of how this is all going to shake out?
Sure. One of the bills in Springfield would eliminate spread pricing so that it would make it so that the pharmacy benefit managers would not be able to essentially charge the state a certain amount and then they wouldn't be able to keep as much of the money, essentially, the pharmacy benefit managers. Instead, they'd make a flat fee. And if that were to succeed, then the independent pharmacists, maybe they say there wouldn't be as much incentive to underpay them. They think that that might help. And there have been some other states that have made similar changes where they've kind of disallowed that sort of practice. in their Medicaid managed care programs.
Well, we shall keep turning to you for the latest. It seems like a really interesting one, you know, an interesting shift in this area of business. So we'll keep looking to you to keep us updated on this. Thanks so much for being with us today. Lisa Shanker, business reporter covering healthcare at Chicago Tribune. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we are going to be taking a look at the paint industry and how it is shifting gears a little bit to try to appeal to millennial homeowners. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. A little bit of a short show. We're going to cut things off about 12:40 and get you to that White Sox pregame today. But still lots to do on the show leading up to then. Right now, we are joined by Stephen Kuritz, who wrote about the paint industry and how it is reshaping itself to appeal to millennial homeowners. Stephen, thanks so much for being with us today. Appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Certainly. So tell us what the paint industry is doing to kind of shift gears towards younger shoppers.
Well, my piece focused on two new paint brands. One's called Claire, the other is Backdrop, and they're direct-to-consumer, and they really want to just shake up the entire way you shop for paint. Right now, you know, traditionally you go to the hardware store, you have the paint, you pick out, you look at a lot of paint chips, maybe hundreds of color chips, and then you have the paint made or you have a sample made, you bring it back to your house. You know, we all know the process. This is, you go online, you look at the colors online, you can either get samples that are stickers that go on your wall, they'll mail them to you, or a lot of people who are using these brands just buy the paint directly, and the paint gets drop shipped to you. And so there's no, you know, interaction at all with the hardware store.
Which seems like a great idea in theory. I think maybe part of the fun or angst, depending how you're looking at it, right, is like testing it on the walls. I think everybody's kind of been through that process. So that's an interesting innovation, right? That's an interesting way to do that with stickers and that way of testing. And so how are these new companies, how's the market rather reacting to these new companies?
Well, you know, I didn't report on sales figures. I'm not quite sure. And maybe they're not, you know, quite sure themselves, because one debuted, you know, last July, and another was, I think, November or December of last year. So it's still very new. You know, what the founders of both companies said is that millennials are excited by this. I think there's a sense, you know, we've seen it with Casper and mattresses, Warby Parker with eyewear, where millennials just aren't interested in spending their time in stores the way that maybe previous generations of shoppers did. They'd rather go out to restaurants or travel or do other things. And so I think they're having success in that way. And the other thing about them is they're trying to make, you know, paint is a very, generally speaking, it's sort of boring industry, and it hasn't changed in decades, if not, you know, more than 100 years. Each of them offer a very curated list, a number of colors. Each of them, like about 50 to 55 colors. So they're making the decisions for you. Claire, for example, offers only three colors of white. And so the idea is to streamline everything and then also make it fun. You know, Claire's, they have a shade of green called avocado toast. You know, which seems to be the favorite food of millennials. And, you know, all Backdrop is similar. Their colors have whimsical names and on-trend names. And I think people, you know, my sense was that some of the people that are buying the paint are almost buying it because they're attracted to the name rather than maybe the quality of the paint or the color itself.
And how does the price point of this method compare to going to the hardware store and taking the cans home and all that stuff?
They're about 45, each of them, it's really roughly about $45, $50 a gallon, which is the cost of the medium level, you know, Benjamin Moore or Sherwin-Williams type paint. You know, I mean, for them, I think it's a little bit about cost. And it's a little bit about convenience. You know, if you go to the hardware store and you have to buy, you know, my wife and I just an hour ago were at a hardware store. We're painting a baby nursery, and we bought the small container of paint to test on the wall, and then we're going to see, and if that's correct, then we'll go back and buy more. If it's not, we've just spent whatever that was, you know, and kind of wasted that money, and now have a small, you know, jar of paint in our house. So it can cut that out, but it also cuts out the trips to the store, and it's, if they're selling convenience as much as they are price.
Sure, and there's, I think if you live in even a city, certainly there's something to be said for having something shipped to you as opposed to having to, like, get a cab or on a bus or something like that with a bunch of paint. That's kind of a drag. Been there, done that, and it's not good.
Yeah. I think a lot of it, when I think of these brands like Casper or others that are direct-to-consumer, I think they really are geared at urban living. I mean, you know, if you're in a city, you know, you spend a lot of time at your job, you work hard, and then the weekend comes, and it's difficult. You just don't load up your car and go to the big box store, you know, in the suburbs. It's a different lifestyle. So, you know, to be schlepping around the city, going to a hardware store on a Saturday, and then going back, or even finding a big box store like a Lowe's, you know, in a place like Manhattan, you know, it's difficult.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting. And as you note in the piece at NewYorkTimes.com, which I'm going to tweet out after the program, this is an industry that is kind of overdue for a disruption. So it's really interesting to see how that's occurring. So thanks so much. Appreciate you being with us, Stephen Kuritz, style reporter at New York Times. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Last couple minutes of the Biz Lunch. We're going to wrap things up a little bit early today, get you over to that White Sox pregame about 12:40. But still, we got a couple minutes. I want to follow on that last story we were just talking about with Stephen Kuritz, the style reporter at New York Times. That's really interesting. You know, he noted in the piece, and I just tweeted it out if you follow me on Twitter, he noted that here's an industry that, you know, it's kind of this quiet, straightforward industry, and it's been the same since the jump, since it first started. Like, you buy your paint, you go home, you test it, you paint, off you go. And so it's kind of overdue for hitting this, hitting a digital disruption, which I think is kind of an interesting piece of that.
Yeah, I was interested to see his story just about a week after I read another story about paint in The New Yorker about this company called Faro and Ball. Have you ever heard of that?
I think they're mentioned in his piece.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. It's a British company.
Yeah.
And they're much more expensive than the companies that he was looking at. But it's an older company, too. But they sell for about $110 a gallon. So that's like double, close to triple the amount that he was citing.
What does the paint do?
It's good paint. What more do you want? Well, I think it's notable because it's they note it for its like murky antique looking shades, which is sort of off trend, at least in the last 10 years, maybe, or that's what they point out in the story. I'm kind of speaking out of my depth, but it was interesting to learn about it. But people, because it photographs really well, that kind of darker and these kinds of shades that they have. But they also talked about having a paint consultant named Joa Studholm.
That's exactly what I want my paint consultant to be named.
I know, it's not a bad name. And she goes like into people's homes and looks at the space and talks to the owners and consults with them on, you know, what kind of paint to use, which I guess is not that extraordinary, except the price, which I can't find the exact hourly rate, but they do note one story that she had where this person was really not sure what she wanted to do. They went back and forth over and over, and it was about 6 hours of paint consulting, and that ran her over $2,000.
Oh, my.
Which I just loved.
Griffin, I think we're in the wrong business.
This is just choosing the color. This is not.
Yeah, I'm not even going to do the painting for you. I'm just going to tell you what might look nice.
I know. Then you're going
to
buy
it. Lead you to a decision.
Got
to
buy it.
And then you're
going to
give me $2,000 for that? What the heck am I doing talking into a microphone?
Well, just start giving advice about paint colors over the air.
Over the radio.
Just wait for the checks to come in.
That's exactly what's going to happen.
Give an address.
Like, you want that smoky purple. I can tell from the furnishings you have. You would like a dark, smoky aubergine wall.
Well, Stephen was talking about the names of the colors too.
I've always wanted that job for nail polish, lipstick, paint, any of those. I think naming colors would be such a fun job.
Seems fun, but I bet it's harder than it seems. Like, and there were some really, this company also has some primo names. Skimming Stone, Shadow White. I guess that's not that crazy. I'm trying to find them now. But I was struck by how inventive they were with the names and how important that is probably to their business. Nobody wants to just buy a green. And the fact is you've got like 20 different greens, which is actually on the low side. Mm-hmm. The other thing about this company that was interesting was they limit the number of shades that you can choose from.
Like 100, less than 150.
Yeah, because if you were going like in a green, they would only have 15 options, whereas other companies would have like 100 or something like that.
Oh, yeah. No, they'll sell you like Sherwin-Williams or actually Benjamin Moore will sell you this whole thing. It's like a fan deck of every single paint color they have. It's like $20 or $30, and you can just sit there and look at all of them. It's really quite a magical little tool. But no, I that's fair.
Mizzle, a gray green, gets its name from a colloquialism for that familiar British weather condition halfway between mist and drizzle.
Mizzle. That's what we're having today.
Yeah.
We're having a mizzly day.
Enjoy the mizzle.
For sure. Enjoy the mizzle, everybody. There's also one of the companies that he mentioned, Claire's. They have one called No Filter, which is a light beige with warm undertones, which, of course, it's like for the art director, Instagram art director in all of us. That's what it's for.
Well, that's a huge part of it. I mean, I think Instagram's changed a lot of different businesses and rerouted what people find important, because that's a huge part of how is this going to present through the picture that I take of it with my phone.
I mean, if I'm taking a picture of anything in my home with Instagram, I just like shove all the junk to the side and take a picture so it looks like it's much cleaner. So anyway, it is now seconds away from being 12:40. So let's get you over to that White Sox pregame.